Good morning. Let's try that again. Nice to see you. Today is Tuesday, April 19th. The Minnesota Senate Taxes Committee will come to order. Members, we have six bills, it looks like, on our agenda today. And many of them deal with sales tax exemptions. And that's kind of our theme today, is looking over some of those perhaps cases where those sales tax exemptions could end up costing taxpayers additional funds. So with that, our first bill is Senator Tomasoni's bill. I believe Senator Bach is going to help present that bill today. And that will be Senate File 4013. And as folks are coming to the table, just so the committee members know, the intent is to lay all of these bills over for possible inclusion in a later tax bill. And we do have the A1 amendment, Senator Bach. Do you have that in front of you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on behalf of Senator Tomasoni, thank you for holding a hearing on Senate File 4031. And Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape Senator Tomasoni would like to have it.
Thank you, Senator Bach. This would be an author's amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The A1 author's amendment is adopted. And now to Senator Tomasoni's bill. Senator Bach, would you like to start with your testifiers, or do you want to do a brief introduction first?
Why don't I briefly say something first, Madam Chair?
Senator Bach.
You know, this committee is seeing a lot of proposals to exempt local units of government from sales tax, very broad ones to very narrow ones. And this one's about school construction. And what is really, really different, and my two testifiers are from school districts in Ely and the core Iron Range, the Quad Cities, Virginia Eveleth Gilbert, who are building, they're both doing major school projects. In fact, in Virginia, Mr. Schmidt is doing a big new project, about $160 million. Both of these two referendums were passed either right at the time of the onset of the pandemic. And we all know what's happened to construction costs during the pandemic, the supply chain problems that are happening. And they can testify to their specific projects. But I think, Madam Chair, as the committee contemplates what we might want to consider relative to sales tax exemptions, school construction is different. Unlike a city or county that can just levy some money to pay for some cost overruns, schools have passed a referendum, and they just can't go back to the taxpayers and get some additional money to make up the funding shortfalls in their projects. So they're in a very, very difficult spot when you look at what's going on with inflation and construction right now. So I just, Madam Chair, as we think about what we're going to put in the bill, I just want to say that schools are in a different situation than the other local units of government are. With that, Madam Chair, and I don't know if Senator Tomasoni has any opening remarks. I didn't have the chance to communicate with him this morning. I guess if he is, Madam Chair, maybe we should hear from him.
Senator Tomasoni, are you on Zoom today? We'll always come back for Senator Tomasoni's remarks, should he be able to join us today. With that, we will move to our testifiers. And our first testifier is Noel Schmidt, Superintendent of Rock Ridge Public Schools. Noel.
Thank you, members of the Tax Committee, and a special thanks to Senator Tomasoni and Senator Bach for moving this forward. I am superintendent of the newly consolidated district called Rock Ridge up on the Iron Range. It is probably one of the best educational stories in Minnesota that many people may not have heard of. We did everything right. The community was absolutely fantastic coming together, looking for an education to benefit the kids now and in the future. So what's happened is voters agreed to consolidate. They agreed to build a cooperative high school and two elementary schools, pooling all of their resources. We went to the voters, and in two separate elections, it passed in both of them. Also, the consolidation passed in both of the communities. This is almost unheard of. And so we have just finished building an elementary school. We have a high school we're about 10 months away, and that high school is built on Career Academy. This is not a normal high school. It's going to be one of the most unbelievable built buildings because of how we're using space for the kids. But what's happened is that we priced this thing appropriately when we were doing it in 2018, starting it. The elementary school, first one done, is on budget. The high school is on budget. The third elementary school that we have, and we priced this thing appropriately. We even assumed inflation, $6.7 million over budget. All of these overruns are because of COVID. How could we have predicted that in 2018, 2019, when we were sending this to the voters? And so to give you an example of what's happened, steel, 127% up. Anything to do with plastics, 30% up. Anything to do with aluminum, 23% increase. These are unbelievable increases. We even had to take money from our demolition fund and slide it over. We're looking for every penny, every dime that we can do so we can finish this project for the voters who approved it, and we want to follow through and finish what we started. So we would like consideration for this to help our voters out, help our kids out. We believe this is a highly unusual situation. This is not what has happened in other parts of the state. And part of this has happened because of COVID, and we passed it way back in 2019. We built two buildings on schedule, on budget. It's the third one because we can't build a third building until we move the kids out of the older building. That's why the delay has occurred. So that's what I'm humbly asking this committee to consider in our extraordinary circumstances.
Thank you very much. Superintendent. And then our next testifier, Principal Owalski.
Yes. Chair Nelson and members of the Senate Tax Committee, my name is Ann Elke. I think I spoke to you before. I think I was Annie Oakley at that time. I am the elementary principal for the Independent School District 696 in Ely, Minnesota. I'm proud to say that I'm a graduate of the school. I went to college and returned. I became a teacher there, and then now I'm serving as elementary principal there in my home district. Let me begin by thanking Senator Tomasoni for introducing Senate File 4031, and thank you to Senator Bach for presenting the bill today and for all his support for our school district in Ely. In 2020, the citizens of Ely began the process to modernize the Ely school campus by connecting nearly our 100-year-old elementary building and our 100-year-old high school building with a new building in the middle, which will include a 21st century learning space for science, technology, and engineering, a new gymnasium, a new library and media center, a new food service area, and additional energy efficiency and technology upgrades to the existing 100-year-old buildings. The entire project was to cost a bit more than $20 million, with $10 million coming from the taxpayers of Ely and $7 million from taconite taxes as part of the Department of Iron Range Resources School Collaboration Program. The use of LTFM funding combined with a modest federal grant made up the difference. As is the case for so many other projects up on the Iron Range, pandemic-related supply chain issues and increases in the cost of building materials have caused the project to unexpectedly increase by over $4 million for us. The sales tax exemption proposed by Senator Tomasoni will help us reinvest much needed dollars back into the project and will help to fill that funding hole. In the case for Ely, almost $400,000 can be reinvested into the project as we work to find different ways to fill the funding deficit. I want to assure the members that our project contains nothing frivolous. We're talking about technology and energy upgrades to a very old facility to serve students for the years to come. Safety upgrades that will keep our students and teachers safe. And modernizing learning spaces so that we can train students with the skills that they'll need to either enter the workforce upon graduation or go on for further education. Members, thank you for the consideration of this bill, which would greatly help our small school district in northern Minnesota. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Principal. Members, any questions for our testifiers? I'm wondering, Senator Bach, maybe I'll have Ms. Pollack just go through the school districts and the projects briefly. I believe that's in front of us on our Department of Revenue revenue estimate, but I think it's important that we speak briefly about those school districts. And I know, I believe the A1 amendment is reflected in our revenue estimate. So let's just get that on the record. Ms. Paula, please.
Madam Chair, members, yes, the A1 amendment added a few school districts to the bill. So I believe there are a total of 8 districts or schools that would be part of this bill. So the bill, as introduced, had the Duluth Public Schools, the Ely Public Schools, Hibbing, and Rock Ridge. The amendment added Chisholm, Nashwauk, Kewayton, Northland Learning Center, and Northern Light Academy. And Madam Chair, as you mentioned, the revenue estimate does include all the districts as proposed to be amended and as the amendment has been adopted. The projects vary from administrative buildings and transportation facilities, renovations to existing buildings, and construction of a new building to connect elementary and high school buildings, construction of an early childhood family education center, 2 new elementary school buildings, renovation and construction for elementary school and high schools and various other buildings in Independent School District 695, construction of a new building and another attached building, a community wellness center in Independent School District 319, and renovations and additions to the James Madison building at the Northland Learning Center, and then finally the construction of a new building at the Northern Lights Academy.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Senator Bach, have there been referendums then at, so we had the 4 that were in the original bill, Duluth, Ely, Hibbing, and the 4th one, Rock Ridge. Those all had referendums. Do you know, tell us about the other additions, Chisholm, Keewatin, Northland Learning Center, Northern Lights Academy. Have there been referendums on all of those?
Madam Chair, the Section 3, the Nashwauk-Keewatin project, went to a referendum in early February. So that referendum did pass. But at the time that the bill was put together, you notice the bill was jacketed by the reviser back on December 13th. So that referendum has passed since then. The Section 7 and 8 in the amendment, or on the bill summary, Section 7 and 8, the Northland Learning Center and the Northern Lights Academy, are both, those projects are alternative learning facilities where a number of school districts participate to send children to them. Those are not referendum projects. There actually is a bill, I believe Senator Rarick has, to provide some state bonding resources to those 2 projects to pay for part of the construction. And then the cooperating school districts that operate those facilities will have to figure out how they provide for the rest of the debt service. But that's a pretty hard thing to pass a referendum for when you have 6 or 8 school districts that all participate in an alternative learning facility. So I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle the debt service on the, if they're successful in the bonding bill, how they'll handle the debt service on the balance of the construction. I know they'll come to the IRRRB for some of that help in the case of Northland up in Virginia. And if we have the resources, that the nickel that we talked about earlier this year in this committee, a portion of that likely would be considered for the Northland project to help buy down some of the debt service for the participating school districts.
Thank you, Senator Bach. And then has there been a referendum for the Chisholm Public Schools?
Chisholm and Hibbing, I don't believe, have gone to a referendum yet. They're in the planning processes to go to a referendum, but they'll have both school districts will have a referendum.
Is there? I mean, do we know when? Do you know the date? Do you know the date of the referendum?
I think this summer. Sounds like their lobbyist said this summer they'll be going out.
Sometime in the summer. Okay, and then let's see. I had one other question too. Oh yes, has the and then has the IRRB authorized that additional use for these particular projects of the additional 5 cents?
The Hibbing and Chisholm ones, we have not committed any money for that yet because that's contingent upon moving the nickel of taconite tax money over to the Iron Range School Cooperation account. So that those projects are likely going to, any IRRB participation will be contingent upon that nickel moving. We did commit to, I believe, $7 million for the Ely School District. And in that original bill that this committee heard, there was a provision in there that we talked about relative to allowing the IRRB to sell some bonds to pay for that $7 million so that we could free up some money for some of these other projects. So that's something we'll have to consider when we put the omnibus bill together. And there's been some amended language on that nickel the council's been working on. But that provision is pretty important to make some of these projects work, like Ely, because we'd like to be able to provide some additional help to Ely, but we can't do that unless we can actually bond for the $7 million that we originally committed.
Well, thank you, Senator Bach. Any further comments or questions? Senator Weber.
I have a question, and I would mention that Senator Tomasoni has his hand raised, too. So,
oh, wonderful. Very good.
Do we know on a statewide basis how many school districts might be in a similar situation?
Well, Senator Weber, as far as exemption from sales and use tax for construction?
Well, as far as construction projects that are sort of fitting the same time period and would be encountering the same issue.
Yes, we have. We do have a revenue estimate on that. I don't have that at my fingertips. I don't know if Mr. Wilms can pull that up, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wilms.
Senator Nelson, or Madam Chair, and Senator Weber, so the Department of Revenue has estimated the tax expenditure if there was a global exemption provided or a universal exemption provided for these types of projects statewide. And annually, their estimate is approximately $9.2 to $9.5 million. So that provides some sense of what they think is the broader scope of these projects and the taxes being collected on them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilms. Something to consider going forward. Any further comments or questions? Senator Tomasoni, welcome to the Tax Committee. Please continue.
Chair and committee members, thank you for hearing this bill. This bill actually has a unique feature in that it will actually save money in that the sales tax will reduce costs that are badly needed due to construction COVID overruns. It will have to come from somewhere, and the sales tax is a way to do it. Thanks, Madam Chair and committee members. I ask you to include this provision in the final bill as it is badly needed due to unforeseen circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. It is so good to hear from you. And we do know that the inflation is particularly devastating in many of these construction projects. And your point was well made, Superintendent, regarding the costs when they were estimated, when the referendum took place, and the vast inflation since then. So thank you so much. Senator Bach, thank you for bringing this bill. Any further closing comments?
Nothing further, Madam Chair. Maybe to Senator Weber's point, maybe we could create a window where referendums passed in and say, you know, those projects were specifically impacted by COVID cost overruns. I don't want to set a precedent where if a school district goes out for a referendum next year, because they know what the cost overrun costs are. So I think we want to be careful we don't create a precedent that's going to be very expensive to live with down the road. But there's a narrow band of school districts that find themselves in a very difficult spot here because they passed the referendums right before or at the very early beginning of COVID when we hadn't recognized any of the inflation in any of the cost estimates yet. And Madam Chair, I'll get the dates of these referendums for Ely and for Rock Ridge. And I know Senator Miller has a project also that's impacted by this right in the middle of the COVID inflation window. So I'll make sure that we have that date so that also can be incorporated if the committee decides to move forward.
Thank you, Senator Bach. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. As amended, laid over as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A special thanks to the testifiers for coming today. I think you might get the travel trophy today. All right. Next, members, our next bill is Senator Rarick's bill, which is Senate File 3719. Senator Rarick, welcome to the Tax Committee. And Senator Weber, would you move Senator Rarick's bill, please?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Your bill's in front of us. Senator Rarick, please introduce yourself and talk about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Jason Rarick. And Senate File 3719 is a bill that came to me from a constituent in discussions this last summer. He runs a lawn care service in the summer and snow removal and services like that in the winter. And he was talking about how odd it is when he does the snow removal and a lot of the services in the winter, he does not have to charge sales taxes for those services. But in the summer, with the lawn care and the landscaping, he does. And he has had a number of clients over the years question why, when I know for me as an electrician, I do not charge sales tax on my labor. Most services are not charged sales tax on labor. But on a few, like lawn care, you are. And so we drafted a bill to exempt those services. I know there are a few others, but this bill just focused on the lawn care and the related services. And I do believe we have one testifier.
Thank you, Senator Rarick. Mr. Forrest Sire, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Tax Committee. My name is Forrest Sear, and I represent the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. MNLA is the trade association for the Minnesota green industry, including everything from landscaping and irrigation to lawn care, wholesale nursery growers, and arborists. The green industry in Minnesota is robust and contributes roughly $3.5 billion to the state's economy and employs over 40,000 people. During the outbreak of the pandemic, the importance of the industry was evident. MNLA members were stalwart employers of Minnesotans during the initial economic downturn and continue to be important contributors to the state's economy. Additionally, MNLA members are responsible stewards of Minnesota's natural resources and provide services that are essential to the health and well-being of Minnesotans. I'm happy to testify in favor of Senate File 3719, and I want to thank Senator Rarick for bringing this important bill forward. The landscape industry has a complex relationship with sales tax, made evident by a cursory reading of Minnesota Statute 297A and various guidance documents from the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Each year, we ask our members which issues are the most important to them in their business, and each year, the complexity of sales and use tax is at the top of that list. Additionally, MNLA convened a sales tax working group consisting of a diverse range of Minnesota landscaping companies, from very small to larger companies throughout Minnesota. The group identified sales and use tax compliance as one of the most onerous aspects of running a landscaping business. They cited lack of clarity on taxable versus non-taxable landscaping services, audits, and other tax compliance issues. Additionally, the customers of MNLA companies have also expressed confusion to the subject, as Senator Rarick alluded to with his constituent. Given the holistic nature of many landscape projects, it is common to have taxable and non-taxable services on the same project, leading to headaches and frustration. Members of the working group also mentioned experiencing multi-year audits with kind of not really an end in sight in those, and obviously that can be frustrating as well. To illustrate the point about what's taxable, what's versus what's not, one of the talking points that we have is that if you have a plant and you put it into the ground, that's considered an improvement to real property and is not taxable. But if you take the same plant and put it into a pot, even on the same project, that is considered taxable. And so obviously that can cause a lot of confusion when doing accounting for projects, when doing end of the year accounting, and especially during those long audits that they might face. This bill will help change that. The changes to 297A found in the bill will help streamline tax compliance and auditing issues by aligning landscape and lawn care services with other taxable land, non-taxable landscape services. Additionally, as other testifiers have in the other bills, obviously prices are rising for goods and services, and now is a fantastic time to help lower the costs on these essential services provided by MNLA's green industry, lawn care companies, as well as services that like gardening and vegetable gardens and things like that. So it's a good bill. We'd really appreciate your support. And the services really are fantastic for both the well-being of Minnesotans and the environment. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sear. Any comments or questions, members? Senator Rarick, do you have any further testifiers?
We do not, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Sear, this is a common problem, not to just in our landscaping industry, but it reminds me somewhat of speaking with some of our restaurateurs as far as what is taxed, what is not, regarding sales tax on things like candy bars. Twix candy bar is taxed, whereas others are not. Has to do with the amount of flour in the Twix bar. So there's no doubt that it's complicated. I do hope that there is some hope for relief and some sort of clarifications as needed if the actual legislation is not clear. But I do know some of our industries do rely on online databases, online services to help with some of these taxation issues. But we don't want any of our businesses to be stuck with unclear laws or costly audits, too. So understand the concern. Senator Rarick, then, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, when this was brought to me and I reached out to some research folks to draft this up, I was surprised at how many different services and how complicated some of that tax law was. And I realize this just addresses one little piece, but if we can make it a little bit clearer for folks in this area and maybe little by little look at some of these other areas as well, that would be great. But I thank you for the time and considering this bill.
Thank you, Senator Rarick. We will give it consideration. We'll also see how this might impact streamlined sales tax. That's always an issue we have to be cognizant of. Senator Rest, do you happen to know that off the top of your head regarding some of the lawn care and related services? Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, streamline only identifies definitions that member states need to abide by. They have no position whatsoever on the rate of a tax that is imposed by a state or whether something should be taxed or be tax exempt. It's totally irrelevant.
Thank you very much, Senator Rest. Thank you, Senator Rarick. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Our next bill is Senator Goggin's bill, Senate File 2887. Senator Goggin, welcome to the committee. I see that you are remote. Senator Coleman, would you please move Senator Goggin's bill, Senate File 2887? Thank you, Senator Coleman. Senator Goggin, to your bill.
First of all, Good morning, Madam.
Do you have any
amendments?
Good morning,
Madam Chair.
Yes.
No, I do not.
All right, Senator Goggin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Thanks for taking the time to hear this bill today. Pretty simple bill. We had back on March 11th of 2018, the city of Mazeppa experienced a fire in one of their buildings. And what this bill does is it exempts the repairs, capital equipment repairs, from any state sales tax. We originally had a January 2022, January 1, 2022, expiration date, but as previous testifiers and bills here at the committee have stated, COVID came along and delayed the project and the work on that. And so what we're looking to do is extend that date to January 1 of 2024. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier to go into a little more detail as to what they're doing at the City of Mazeppa.
Yes, Senator Goggin. We have the City Administrator from Mazeppa on Zoom as well, Mr. Carl Narang. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Carl Narang. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Mazeppa. I'm here with one of our EDA members and former mayor, John Betcher. We've had this tragedy that happened in our community in 2018. We've been working at doing everything we can to make it palatable for someone to rebuild on that spot. The debris has been removed, the fire has been put out, the danger has been avoided, but that building is a vacant lot right now. And as you know, for a lot of small towns, their central business district is their lifeblood. It's what everybody sees when they come to town. They expect to see buildings and business taking place, and being that we are a small community, even one building being gone puts a big hole in our economy. Everything we can do for someone who's willing to invest in that piece of property or invest in a building on that property to bring a viable business to town, we want to make sure that they have every advantage that they can get, because small towns, we're a limited market. We need to be able to have businesses that provide amenities so that people do want to move here and sustain our growth. Mr. Betcher, you have anything?
Mr. Betcher, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm John Betcher, and I'm a member of the Economic Development Authority in Mazeppa, former mayor. And we look at the sales tax exemption on any facilities that might be built on that property as a win-win for everybody. It doesn't cost the state any money until something gets built there, and after that, they'll be charging sales tax on their restaurant facilities, bar facilities, and there'll be real estate tax on there for Mazeppa, Wabasha County, and the state of Minnesota thereafter. So we feel it would be a good investment. We do have someone looking at putting up a facility there, and it would be really nice if we could extend that sales tax exemption. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Betcher. Just a question either for Senator Goggin or maybe either of his testifiers. I think I heard you mention that the cleanup has been done, but I just wanted to know, do you have some prospects? What's your timeline for actually the rebuilding, the construction for which you would like to see a sales tax exemption? Do you have some sort of a timeline?
Right now, it would be very late of 22, possibly early 23, to get a start on a facility. Okay. And it would replace a bar restaurant that was there in the bar restaurant facilities. And as you know, there's an awful lot of them went out of business in the last 2 years. For somebody to attempt to start one up, it takes everything we can do to entice that.
Thank you, Mr. Betcher.
Thank you.
Any further comments, Member Senator Rust?
excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Goggin. I think this is the kind of correction that we need to make and to allow this extension. And sorry you had to have a bill to do that, but in terms of the cost, but Madam Chair, I hope we include it in the bill.
Thank you, Senator Rust. We have made many COVID extensions for the last 2 years for many different reasons. Thank you so much. Senator Goggin, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Senator Rust, for your comments there. This is the right thing to do. Our small towns, especially in rural Minnesota, are really hurting, and anything we can do to help them spur economic growth, I think is the right thing to do. So I look forward to seeing this bill included in our final tax bill. So thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Senator Goggin. The bill is laid over. Members, our next bill is Senator Coleman's bill, Senate File 4424. Temporary suspension, permission of sales and use tax remittance requirements for certain state fair sales. Senator Coleman, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move Senate File 4424.
Thank you, Senator Coleman. Do you have any amendments?
I don't believe so.
All right. I do not see any. Wonderful. To your bill, Senator Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We all in the Senate are still looking for ways to help Minnesota recover from the pandemic, from our families to our small businesses, and the state fair is no exception to that. This bill was brought to me by the state fair, and like many of you, I am a big fan, and I look forward to it every year. When I found out this bill was getting a hearing, I have not stopped thinking about Pronto Pups and Sweet Martha cookies ever since. So I am happy to bring forth this bill. I know in the past couple of years, we have permitted county fairs to retain their sales tax for maintenance of buildings, and what this bill does would allow the state fair to retain the sales tax that they generate on sales of tickets for 2 years for the 2022 fair and the 2023 fair. The legislation further requires that the retained sales tax be used for maintenance of fair facilities. The legislation is only for a limited duration to help the fair get back on its feet after COVID. We all know how it impacted them and their operations, and would help them to pay for the maintenance and infrastructure improvements. And with that, Madam Chair, I do have a testifier, Mr. Jerry Hammer, the general manager of the state fair.
Thank you, Senator Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Coleman. My name is Jerry Hammer. I'm the general manager of the state fair. The fair is one of the largest events in the world. It's also perhaps Minnesota's greatest billboard. In 2019, we had visitors from all 50 states, plus 33 nations around the world. The state fairgrounds are defined as state property in the care, custody, and control of the State Agricultural Society, which is the governing body of the fair. It was founded in 1854. It's the same institution today, so it's actually older than the state itself. The fair, beginning in the late 80s, was allowed to retain sales tax, provided that it was used for capital work, but an economic downturn in 02. 2002. At that time, we lost that exemption, and we thought about coming back and looking to have that reinstated, and decided not to because we were doing fine without it. We do have our own bonding authority, and we've done a lot of work to the fairgrounds over the last 20 years in particular, about $200 million actually in improvements to state property without any help from the state. And under normal circumstances, we're more than happy to do that. That's why we didn't come back for additional help. Now, the fair itself, when things are going well, the economic impact is close to $300 million a year. It's Super Bowl size, but without any subsidies. Anything that happens at the fair, whether it's capital work, program, maintenance, whatever it is all done through society funds. COVID blew everything up in 2020, when particularly when your business is bringing people together, and we can't. We made it our priority. We knew there'd be no fair almost from the get-go in 2020. We made it our priority to keep our operation intact, and we did that. We were successful in doing so, but it required that we spend our reserves, that we stop all capital and maintenance work. And in a typical year, we'll do 10 to 12 million per year. We stop everything but emergency maintenance, spent our reserves and borrowed. And what we're hoping for, and we're very grateful for your consideration, is that for the next 2 years, as Senator Coleman said, we're looking to waive the sales tax requirement for the state fair on tickets that are sold. Now, in a typical year, that'll be between 2.5 to 3 million per year.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer. Waiving the sales tax on the tickets then will benefit the purchasers of those tickets. Is that correct? How does it impact the revenues to the society, to the State Fair Society?
Well, instead of the fair forwarding sales tax onto the Department of Revenue, the fair would retain that sales tax and then use that for maintenance and capital work.
Okay, so not an exemption you're asking for. I don't know. I'm going to ask Ms. Pollack if it's actually considered an exemption, since the sales tax would still be paid. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, right, so the sales tax, this is a little different from other sales tax exemptions that we're hearing today, in that the sales tax would be collected at the time of the sale or purchase for events connected with the state fair. It would be collected by the State Agricultural Society and then retained for improvements to state-owned buildings and facilities on the fairgrounds. And so it would not be remitted, as state sales tax usually is, to the Department of Revenue. So there would not be a consumer or someone making a purchase at the state fair would not see any difference in the sales tax paid on their purchase.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. And I see that our revenue estimate is about 3 million. Okay, thank you. Any further comments? Senator Klein.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe council or one of the members of the committee can inform me on this. Is there a precedent for this type of tax mechanism where we sort of collect it but don't transmit it to the state? Have we done that previously?
Ms. Pollack, we'll move to Senator Rest while you have a chance to look that up. Let's go to Senator Rest.
Well, the answer is yes. Yeah. We do that at the, and I was going to bring that up relative to another question, and that is the State High School League gets to retain the sales tax on their purchases. And I think Senator Coleman mentioned that the county fairs get to do that as well. Now, I'm concerned about this in that even though it's only for 2 years, that there's not really, I read the language and it says it's only 2 years, but I can imagine coming back 2 years from now and saying, notwithstanding, we're going to continue this forever. or at least 10 years, whatever it is. But during the period, during this last, let's say, 10 years, because it was back then that you had some exemption, what's been the increase in the price to get into the state fair? What are the tickets, the normal tickets, not discounted ones, et cetera, but then if you go to the fair and you just have cash in your pocket, what do you pay to get in? Yeah. And how has that changed over the years?
Over the last 10 years, that top ticket price, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's gone from a full price adult ticket. 10 years ago, it would have been in the range of $13. Today, it's $17.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Which is in terms of events, anywhere, movies, whatever. It's a real bargain, and actually the expenses incurred by the fair to produce the fair are $3 or $4 per person greater than the price of the ticket. and that those are services like public safety, which is number one concern, sanitation, all the different programs that we have. So the ticket price is actually subsidized through revenue that we earn from other sources.
Senator Rest.
So Madam Chair, so just to keep in front of us, that also means that that increase in $4 also increases the sales tax revenue that is collected and then is proposed to be retained. I'm fairly neutral on this for this time period, but we should be aware of every single figure that impacts what's happened here, the increase in the costs of running the state fair, real costs, not just inflationary costs, increase in the ticket prices. They have not stayed the same, so that to avoid even asking for a subsidy, an additional subsidy, but this is a subsidy, and we just need to make sure that we understand it pure and simple. It's a subsidy to allow the State Fair Society to retain the sales tax even for a short period of time, 2 years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Mr. Wilms has some more to add to this discussion. Mr. Wilms.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Regarding the precedent of this matter before, one minor clarification regarding the State High School League. That actually is a sales tax exemption that's provided, so it's not charged on those tickets. However, the MSHSL under Section 128C24 then has to take a comparable amount to what that exemption is. So they calculate the amount of the exemption and then make a transfer into a nonprofit charitable foundation created for the purpose. So the mechanism is slightly different, but looks very similar.
Thank you, Mr. Wilms. Actually, that was my bill a few years ago. Glad to get that clarification. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm having technical difficulties, so I'm not using the computer Zoom right now. And I apologize, I don't know this off the top of my head. Do you do a report or provide a report to somebody during the year showing what expenses that you were doing and like what you're doing with the bonding authority? I'm asking this because sometimes when we do these type of, it's not quite an exemption, but exemptions, we have them report back to the legislature to show what the funds were used for, just to be very transparent. So I'm wondering if you already do that, if you would include that, and if you don't, if that's something that we might consider just to be, if this moves forward, to be transparent so people know what, you know, their tax dollars are being used for.
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Mr. Hammer.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We're audited annually, but there's no specific report to any entity other than the State Ag Society, which is the governing body of the fair.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I might add that when projects do happen at the fair, because the fair has such a high profile, they're covered very well in news media. And with facilities, the fair's whole approach with its facilities, and if we look at stadiums, we look at other public facilities, they have generally a pretty short shelf life. We keep ours. The oldest buildings on the fairgrounds are from 1907. Our grandstand is from 1909, and actually it was renovation of the grandstand that we used that project to obtain our own bonding authority. And we've used that 4 times in the meantime to both rehab old facilities, historic facilities, and build new ones as well.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer. Any further comments, questions? Any other testifiers, pro or con? Senator Cullen, closing comments, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the robust discussion. I think, in my very biased opinion, that the Great Minnesota Get-Together is the best state fair in the entire country, and they felt the impact of COVID, and this is one way that we can do our part to help them recover like we're doing with every other industry in Minnesota. So thank you so much for the time and the consideration.
Thank you, Senator Coleman. The bill will be laid over, and there is no contention for the best state fair. It's in Minnesota. All right. Next, we have Senator Howe, Senate File 4176. Welcome to the committee, Senator Howe.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Great to be with you.
Senator Bach, would you move Senator Howe's bill, please? Thank you so much. Senator Howe, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senate File 4176 provides a sales tax exemption for the construction materials for the construction of the Jacob Wetterling Community Center in St. Joseph. What this would do is provide them an exemption from September 1, 2022 to January 1, 2025 as they construct the building and equip it with what they need to provide this community center that is going to provide the thing is since the Jacob Wetterling event and the loss of him, I think it changed everyone's lives is how they take a look at their children and watch them, and I think this is it's kind of fitting that they name this community center after him. But with that, I would like to go to Ms. Hafner, the city administrator, as a testifier.
And welcome, Ms. Hafner. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and continue, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I am Therese Hafner, city administrator for the city of St. Joseph. Thank you, Senator Howe, for introducing this bill, and members of the tax committee for allowing me this opportunity to speak on the proposed sales tax exemption bill for construction material and supplies for the St. Joseph Jacob Wetterling Community Center. The city of St. Joseph is thankful for the $4 million state bonding that was awarded for the Jacob Wetterling Community Center. After receiving this news in the fall of 2020, we have been active in moving this community center project to fruition, including hiring an architect and a construction manager. Additionally, we have partnered with the St. Cloud Area YMCA to operate the community center to offer programming for all ages. The community center will serve as a health, wellness, and recreation facility, offering a variety of programs for youth to seniors, a center for all ages. One example of youth programming is day camp, where the focus is on health and wellness. Campers participate in gym class, reading, and arts and crafts. This allows youth to learn about teamwork, build self-esteem, independence, and creativity. The center is designed to be approximately 45,000 square feet with court space, gathering space, a walking track, and more. The total estimated project cost is $18 million, resulting in an estimated sales tax of over $686.
She's gone.
No power cord.
No power cord on our end here?
Our end here.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Ms. Hafner, can you hear me?
No, we lost her.
Totally not.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Council.
Yes, Senator Rust.
Thank you. Ms. Pollack or someone, I noticed in these provisions for sales tax exemptions on construction materials that also almost all of them also include materials, supplies, and equipment. What kind of equipment or supplies are covered under, I understand construction materials like lumber and brick and whatever, but what equipment would be purchased and covered under this sales tax exemption that we've done any number of? It looks to be kind of like pro forma, that it is materials, supplies, and equipment.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, so equipment incorporated into a facility, I think, would be something like an HVAC system.
Okay.
And supplies used in the construction, building and construction supplies. But yes, I mean, it is pro forma language. And I can see if there's a fact sheet or something from the Department of Revenue that I could give you some more examples.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Pollack. I was just curious about that, Senator, how it nothing to do really with your bill, but we have that over and over again here, and I just wondered what it, what in general it included, and in particular, I guess, too, how much of the revenue estimate, which in my materials, I did not receive a revenue estimate in materials this morning, how much the revenue estimate is to allow this exemption for the Jacob Wetterling Community Center.
Thank you, Senator Ress. Mr. Wilms, I think you had a late arriving document you could share with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Senator Ress's question about the estimate for this this proposal before you, we had the revenue estimate published early this morning, but consistent with the testifier's estimate of construction costs, it results in a cumulative fiscal impact for the 2 years affected, FY24, FY25, of approximately $480,000, and that's split evenly over FY24 and 25.
Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Senator Rest.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Well, and I think what's important to realize is when they first looked at doing this, it was in addition to another building. Mm-hmm. And then they had to shift because that building actually sold, and they actually now are constructing a new building entirely. So the cost actually went up, which caused them to... which caused an increase in the cost of constructing this building. So they have additional costs that are coming, and I think this will help them to build the building that they originally intended. It'll help reduce that cost. So,
Thank you, Senator Howe. I'm wondering if City Administrator Hafner was able to, if she's still online. Ms. Hafner, I regret that we had a brief power outage here in the Senate Tax Committee, and we were not able to hear all of your testimony. I'm wondering if you would like to recap your about the last half of your testimony. Ms. Hafner.
Hello, everyone. I don't know if you can hear me. I actually cannot hear.
Oh. Can you hear us? Can you hear us?
The host computer is muted, so he's gonna unmute her.
Okay, we have just one more technical glitch. Just a moment.
Yeah, I apologize. Unfortunately, after I testified, I lost all hearing.
Yes, I think it was a problem on our end, but we're hoping we can hear from you.
Okay. Very good. So I didn't hear the dialogue. So I don't know what the conversation was after I testified and what questions you may all have.
We talked about the revenue estimate, which we got this morning. So I think if you'd like to maybe give us a recap of your testimony, we did lose about the last half of that. Ms. Hafner.
Very good. Yeah, so I don't know where you lost the audio for me, but essentially we have partnered with the YMCA to operate the facility to offer programming for all ages. And we had estimated, working with our construction manager, of sales tax of over $686,000. So that is 17% of the state bonding award and 4% of the total project cost. So we are requesting that that go into the project to allow us to build the best community center and be responsible for our taxpayers. As we've heard from earlier testimony, the cost of construction has increased significantly from our original estimates of $10 to $12 million. So every dollar matters in this project. We are supporting it through state bonding, local option sales tax, and private fundraising dollars. And in fact, we've had to delay the project to fundraise those additional dollars. So I just want to conclude with thanking you all for allowing me to speak and for your consideration in supporting this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Hafner. Senator Rust.
Thank you. Senator Howe, your bill draws our attention to this section of the law, which is why I'm asking these questions. And I notice under under the law here that the other facilities that have been granted under these circumstances have been a fire station in Monticello, a fire station in Invergrove Heights, fire station and police station in Minnetonka, a school building in, I don't know what school district 414 is, but a fire station in Mendota Heights and a law enforcement collaboration center in Dakota County. And to provide this for a community center seems to be a little bit off from the preceding exemptions or refunds that have been granted. And I just want to make sure though, this the Jacob Wetterling Community Center is owned by the city, right? It's not owned by, it's totally owned by the city.
Correct.
And is it the case, I would ask Senate Council if they have this kind of information, that other cities that have community centers have indeed paid the sales tax on these buildings, so that this would be kind of out of the realm of the categories, except for that one school building in 414. And I just wonder, are we now going to be seeing other community centers, other cities that are building community centers, wanting to have a similar exemption? And this is not a fault of your thing. It's only looking at what's there in the statute. And then I also noticed that with regard to one of the projects, that they put a limit on the sales tax that could be refunded. And I'm just curious about why, and this is for Senate Council, why that was imposed there, if that was part of the original proposal to limit the sales tax so that the project itself wouldn't grow exponentially, or what? Well, that just looks very curious to me. And you mentioned that the, this is quite a big project to have sales tax at $480,000, and just wonder, are we going to be seeing caps on sales tax so that we don't have, I won't call them runaway costs, but costs that just keep piling up, and all of a sudden we have a sales tax exemption that is worth quite a bit more than $480,000, and that's why for that one project they limited it to quite a bit more than that, $850,000, but nevertheless there was a cap on it. I wonder if Mr. Wilms or Ms. Pollack can give us just a bit of history about how these exemptions come into play. And of course, it is because there is this second party, the contractor, that's involved, rather than the school district or the city, or paying it out of their own pockets to start with.
Thank you.
Or not paying it.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Senator Russ. And just for a little bit to answer your question and a little bit of history, I'm going to turn to Mr. Wilms first, and perhaps Ms. Pollack will add more. In addition to Senator Russ's questions, just a very recent history, you'll recall in this committee last year, in the legislature passed the sales tax exemption for police and fire stations in general, public safety in general. Mm-hmm. Now, that I wondered why it was not listed here as we're reading today on this bill, but it's in a different section of law. And so we will ask Mr. Welms to address that, and also then to Senator Rest's further questions about other history. And, of course, we all are aware of precedent setting, which is always a concern. Mr. Welms.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Rest. The issue that we're touching on here is part of a broader issue that we've discussed as a taxes committee relating to these types of public interest or community projects. And they include many categories. These could be school districts, as we heard earlier from Senator Voxbill, public safety, which was exempted in the 2021 tax bill, highway transportation projects, healthcare projects that are local and nonprofit, and then a broad range of other local government and other nonprofit projects. And typically how these have been enacted into law is almost on an a la carte basis. So projects come before the legislature and it's kind of evaluated and reviewed and enacted on a case-by-case basis. The Department of Revenue has estimated that in totality, these types of projects, the annual tax expenditure would be approximately $75 million. So there's a significant cost savings to doing it on a case-by-case basis and not providing a sort of global open and standing, because then there's a little bit more oversight in terms of the projects coming before the committee. The other aspect you asked about, which was related to the cap, that's identified under 2.12 of the bill and refers to the Minnetonka project. In cases where, I guess I'll back up and say that, you know, the way that these are estimated is based on information provided by those asking for the project. And so there's an open and standing appropriation but we budget based on the information provided. So the cap is sometimes in terms of a little bit of risk management. If there's a delay in the project or we're uncertain that it's going to be those costs, a cap can be provided just as a little bit of a certainty.
Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's very helpful to be reminded of that history and what we've been trying to move toward that we haven't quite made the jump over that last hoop there or whatever, and that we are going to continue every year to get more and more requests, perfectly valid requests, that ought to be included in a blanket general law provision. And I hope we get there sooner rather than later. This year looks like a good year for that, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rest. We have had a good deal of discussion about one unit of government taxing another unit of government in these construction sales taxes. Any further comments, members? Closing comments, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the availability to present the bill. And Senator Rest, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that the state taxing local government on these types of projects is probably not the right avenue to take. So I ask for your support, and I thank you for your time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Howe. The bill will be laid over. Members, our final bill today is Senator Murphy's bill. Senator Murphy, Senate File 1402. Senator Klein, could you move that bill, please? Thank you, Senator Klein. Senator Murphy, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my first visit to the Senate Tax Committee, and I'm very happy to be here today to offer up Senate File 1402. I'm grateful that you're giving this bill a hearing, and as we've learned this morning, electricity is really important to the function of our day-to-day work, and so is water. And so this is an important piece of legislation. There is an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, that changes the date in the proposal, and I would love to offer that or have offer that.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. And Senator Klein, if you'll offer that A1 amendment, please. Thank you, Senator Klein. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, members. Senator Murphy, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's also a revenue estimate included in your materials. It is a modest price tag attached to this, but I want to call your attention to that. Senate File 1402 is a proposal that we introduced last session that would create a sales tax exemption for construction materials for the McCarran's water treatment plant, the plant that processes our drinking water here in St. Paul, including in this Capitol complex. It also processes drinking water for Maplewood, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Roseville, Little Canada, and Arden Hills. The treatment plant that we're talking about is about 100 years old, and the St. Paul regional water system has begun making major improvements to that treatment plant. I have with me Patrick Shea, the general manager of St. Paul Regional Water, and he would share more information about this proposal with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Mr. Shea, introduce yourself for the record and begin, please.
Yeah, good morning, Senator Nelson, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Shea. I'm the general manager at St. Paul Regional Water Services. I'd like to thank Senator Murphy for sponsoring this bill. As laid out, we are a regional drinking water service provider to 14 cities in the East Metropolitan Area, including the capital city of St. Paul. We are governed by a regional board of water commissioners, which member cities have representation on. Our customer base is over 450,000 residents in the East Metropolitan Area. This regional project will benefit the entire East Metropolitan region. As indicated earlier, we are here today regarding Senate File 1402, which asks for an exemption of state sales tax for materials and supplies, which will be used at the McCarran's Water Treatment Plant Improvement Project. As indicated, the McCarran's Water Treatment Plant is the only facility of its kind serving the region and is nearly 100 years old. So there's significant need for both modernization and replacement of plant equipment. The project involves replacing two-thirds of the facility and related treatment processes. Several components scheduled to be replaced do date back even before 1920. This project will improve quality, provide flexibility and reliability, what we hope for is over the next 100 years. In 2018, the Minnesota legislature granted us approval to perform this project through a progressive design build process. The cost for this project is estimated to be $220 million, making it the largest water treatment plant project in the state of Minnesota's history. Phase one of the project is currently underway. We're working with that design build contractor as we speak. We anticipate substantial completion in early 2026, with final completion towards the end of 2026. So as an entity, the board and staff at St. Paul Regional Water Services is committed to providing the right project at the right cost. So as this request, materials, equipment, and supplies used in providing our services are normally exempt from the Minnesota state sales tax. If approved, the sales tax exemption for this project will allow for reimbursement of sales taxes paid by the contractor and all their subcontractors in the most efficient manner, reducing administrative costs and tracking of sales tax. The benefit of this request and the entire McCarran's Water Treatment Plant project will provide regional benefits, as indicated earlier. Lastly, we'd be remiss if we didn't express our support for Senator Rarick's Senate File 216 that includes the broad statewide exemption for construction materials for local units of government. This is an issue that will benefit all utilities throughout the state. Finally, I want to thank again Senator Murphy for carrying this bill and Senator Nelson and her colleagues for allowing us to testify and hearing this bill today. And I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shea. My only question has to do about the retroactive nature. Typically, we are proactive especially during these 2 years of COVID, there's been a lot of retroactivity. I guess my question is, how much of this multi-year project, about what percent has already been completed? I'm just trying to get a sense of the cost for the retroactive sales tax exemption, as opposed to the revenue estimate if it were going forward, a forward-looking sales tax exemption.
Senator Nelson, thank you for the question. Really, the project to date has been mostly through design. We've done some site cleanup, tree removal, construction staging, that type of work. We have not entered into a maximum price guarantee with the design builder, so very little equipment or sales tax has been paid on the project to date. I would guesstimate less than 5%.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any further comments or questions, members? Okay. Senator Rust.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that question is a good one, and it's not only pandemic-related, but the bill itself was introduced well over a year ago and just didn't fit in, obviously, last time. And so in order to really support the project, the retroactivity is necessary.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Any further comments or questions? Closing comments. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for considering this proposal. And I hope that you are able to find its way into your bill. And we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. The bill is laid over as amended. Thank you, members, for the good discussions today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, our next hearing, April 21. This meeting's adjourned. Thank you.